Going to read from Mark, the first chapter, and the first six verses. I'll read from the Voice translation. This is the beginning of the good news of Jesus, the anointed one, the liberator, the Son of God. Isaiah the prophet told us what would happen before he came. Watch, I will send my messenger in front of you to prepare your way and make it clear and straight. You'll hear him, a voice crying in the wilderness. Prepare the way of the Eternal One, a straight way in the wandering desert, a highway for our God. That messenger was John the Baptist, who appeared in the desert near the Jordan River, preaching that people should be ritually cleansed through baptism with water as a sign of both their changed hearts and God's forgiveness of their sins. People from across the countryside of Judea and from the city of Jerusalem came to him and confessed that they were deeply flawed and needed help. So he cleansed them with the waters of the Jordan. John dressed as some of the Hebrew prophets had, in clothes made of camel's hair, with a leather belt around his waist. He made his meals in the desert from locusts and wild honey. Holy wisdom, holy word. Thanks be to God. I want to reflect with you from the subject as printed in the bulletin, Life in the Wild. Life in the Wild. Would you pray with me? Spirit, Spirit of gentleness, blow through the wilderness, calling and free. Spirit, Spirit of restlessness, stir me from placidness, wind, wind on the sea. Spirit, Spirit of gentleness, blow through the wilderness, calling and free. Spirit, Spirit of restlessness, stir me from placidness, wind, wind on the sea. In Jesus' name we all pray. Amen. So it's graduation season, if you haven't noticed. There's this special electricity in the air as people successfully reach important milestones, earning high school diplomas and GEDs and bachelor's degrees and master's degrees and doctoral degrees, moving on to whatever is next. Facebook, the site that I love to love and love to hate, sends me memories every day. So I will never forget what I was doing a year ago or 2 years ago or 5 years ago. And so this week I got all of my pictures from my own seminary graduation in the list of Facebook memories. I smiled wistfully remembering that day 1 year ago. I feel glad that I went to seminary. And can I be honest, 1 year out of seminary, I am clear that I only learned 50% of what I need to know as a minister. Now don't y'all call the seminary and tell them I said this. There's only so much a classroom can teach. And more institutions of learning or realizing this. That's why most schools require some sort of internship or residency so that you can clock some time in the field, time with real people, not just academic concepts, time to make mistakes that actually have real consequences, not just give you disappointing grades. But even the hands-on experience of internships and study abroad programs and residency programs are not enough to equip the class of 2017 for success after school. How will the newly minted doctors deal with the imminent dismantling of the Affordable Health Care Act? How will they respond when patients are too sick to live but too broke to pay? How will they choose to provide care to LGBTQ people when religious exemption bills give them a way to wiggle out of the oath they took to first do no harm? And then how will our brightest and best legal minds maintain their interest in the pursuit of justice in a political climate where civil rights seem optional and immigration is undermined by federal travel bans and public defenders are overwhelmed and overworked and underpaid, when what is immoral is often still legal? And then all those new seminary-trained ministers. What will they do to confront bigotry that is coded in Bible verses? How will they find the courage to preach a sermon that might just get them fired? How will they bring prophetic wisdom to chaplains' offices in those same hospitals where some people get denied care on religious grounds? In seminary, I did learn from colleagues and mentors about the task of resistance. I wrote papers about what it meant to be called to disrupt the social order. I took classes on how to use my preaching gifts for justice. I participated in trainings on faith-based community organizing. But, like I said, I only got 50%. Of what I needed. I did not learn in seminary how to resist well. Say that with me, resist well. Pastor Katie told me that here at TAB, y'all are exploring what it means to be resilient in your resistance, that you have made the commitment not just for the 100 days of resistance, but for beyond, to refuse to surrender, to stand up and fight back. And you want to think about how you stay doing that hard work. You want to think about how to resist well. Well, I soon realized after I graduated from seminary that I had misunderstood something about the nature of resistance. I thought that what I was called to do was to know how to get mobilized to respond when another person of color gets killed by the police, or another transgender woman gets assaulted, or when a city like Flint, Michigan needs clean water to drink and to bathe in. I thought I just needed to know how to have my protest signs ready in the back of my car. I know how to do that. But resisting is not the same as reacting. Resistance is not just about responding immediately. Resistance is about learning to live, to plant roots in the wild. Not taking a vacation in the wild when the Women's March is happening, or the Pride March is happening, or the fill-in-the-blank march is happening. Not visiting the wild every 2 or 4 years, thereabout. Not leaving a yard sign on the edge of the wild and then going back in the house and locking the door. Resistance is not a seasonal activity. Resistance, I'm going to argue, is a wilderness activity. John the Baptist knew what life in the wild was like. He had been pushed to the periphery by his resistance. my spiritual mother, Bishop Yvette Flunder, who's actually in Philly preaching right now, today, likes to say that the only difference between a heretic and a prophet is time. The only difference between a heretic and a prophet is time. Surely John had a prophetic word, but he didn't have a following. He had God on his side, but he was alone in the desert. He had good news that could save the world, but he didn't have a downtown pulpit. He didn't have a sophisticated acoustic technology. He was a voice crying out, the text says, from the wilderness. He was telling people what they didn't want to hear. Get right, turn around, confess. In order to resist well, we must settle in to our new home, the wilderness. We have to be clear that resistance will drive us to the periphery. I hear lots of people talking about how overwhelming the last 130 days have been. Our anxiety is up, our blood pressure is up, we feel dis-ease. We're shocked and we're awed with every headline. We faint with every piece of breaking news. Why is that? Well, resistance is hard when you try to do it from the center. Resistance is hard when you try to do it from the center. When you forget that prophets are actually rarely honored while they're still living. Resistance is hard when we try to hold on to those things and those people that seek to pull us out of the wilderness and back into the hustle and bustle of city life. And what has kept me in the struggle for freedom and equity is the knowledge that I have actually chosen a permanent peripheral status. Some people I love can't and won't go with me to the wilderness. I can't go to every dinner I'm invited to. I can't stay in every conversation I'm invited to. That means I will be the heretic for some period of time, after which I will then be a prophet. And I've made peace with that decision. I don't fight it. I know that in every circumstance, it will eventually be impossible for me to have my feet in both the tame place and the wild place. So I think if we want to resist well, we have to settle in, get comfortable in the wilderness. But not only must we leave behind the center and go to the wilderness in order to sustain our resistance and not be pulled back and forth in and out of our resistance, we must also adapt then to living life in the wilderness. We can't go to the wilderness and live like we're in the city. The wilderness is a scary, dangerous place because the wilderness can convince us that we actually don't have what it takes to survive there. That we're not equipped, we're not made for these kinds of conditions, and that's why we back off a little from the wilderness, get closer and closer to the edge until we can see home again. We dip our toe in, and it's exhausting, and so 6 months later, we've hung up our boxing gloves. The wilderness yielded John the Baptist all he needed to survive. This quirky little bio we have of John the Baptist. He's running around in camel hair clothes and a belt. He's eating locusts and honey. Now, they probably taste like chicken. Check out how John the Baptist adapts to his wilderness environment. He eats food that will not run out. He's not searching for the best of the best, for filet mignon. He's not going back to what he's used to. He's eating what's available to him, locusts, and then honey. I was like, honey, huh? Maybe some medicinal qualities to honey. He might need that in the wild. He might get injured and battered and bruised. But also, honey is sweet, y'all. So he's got a little bit of taste of sweetness with him in the wild. That's encouraging to me. If we're going to settle into the wild, at least let's experience some joy and sweetness there. And then he's got this weird clothing. Maybe not the most fashionable clothing, but it covers him. It protects him. It is durable. It is made for wilderness conditions. Don't wear your heels to the march. You'll get that later. This is, I know you've heard this before. This work is a marathon, not a sprint. Distance runners, I am not a runner, not a runner. Distance runners, I hear, have to make adjustments to their routines in order to be able to crank out long run after long run after long run. You can't approach the marathon like you would approach a 400. Is that the right thing I should say? A 200. If you do, your lungs will burst. If you do, you won't be able to finish. You will not last. The same is true about this resistance work. This indeed is a distance run. But if we live like we're sprinting, we will not win. Not only that, we'll injure ourselves. We have to be prepared to stay and then live in the wilderness. I remember this game it wasn't even a game. It was like, you know, we have 20 minutes to transition to the next activity, and the teacher would pull this out of a hat to bide our time. If you ever played this game, imagine you are stuck on an island. You know this game? Or suddenly you get to go to some planet that is not inhabited right now. And you can take three things with you. You ever play this game? What will you take? This is not a game that we played in seminary. Maybe we should play this in seminary. In the toughest condition, how are we equipped to last, to survive? What do we actually need to live versus what we'd like to have to be comfortable? This is a long haul. And in order to be prepared, we have to act like this is going to be a wilderness season that we don't get to leave until the revolution has come. And so I'm inspired by John the Baptist's funky little bio here. He was prepared to bring good news in a testy culture, in a testy climate. He had all he needed. And ultimately, people started to listen because time passed and his status transitioned from heretic to prophet. Thank God that John the Baptist stayed the course in the wilderness to wait on that transition to come. Thanks be to God.